This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 91. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network. And I'm Riley Bowman. Today, I'm also joined by Jacob Paulson.
Do you think people are tired of our voices?
Well, they could tell us.
I suppose, yes. Well, I'll wait for that update. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome, folks. Today is Monday, January 30th. So today we have our usual Monday news episode of the podcast featuring some great news stories from across the nation, as well as some justified stories that we think you'll find interesting. But first, today's episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast is brought to you by Guardian Nation. So we hope that you'll check that out and stay tuned for a special announcement on that. And Jacob, are we announcing the other thing as well today?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we also have another special announcement. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss it, especially if you're interested in some free gear. Aha, how's that for a tease? So without further ado, it's been a while since we had a proper training tip, hasn't it, Jacob?
It has, yeah. We've been too busy talking about SHOT Show or Best Of or stuff like that.
Or on the road or in other states or crazy places.
Yeah.
So today we've got a training tip, folks, and that is actually called proper warm-up. And the inspiration for this came actually from SHOT Show, from the six-hour range day, VIP range day. And Max Michel sponsored pro shooter with Sig Sauer, one of the best shooters in the whole world, did a little demonstration. And what I really appreciated about his demonstration, I mean, here you have, you know, seriously, one of the best shooters in the world currently. And he stood there and he said, look, I'm going to kind of walk you through and show you how I warm up before I start going through drills and practice and stuff. And I'm like, as soon as he said that, I just got excited.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, how does the great, you know, Max Michel warm up when he's practicing? And by the way, I mean, this is so key because I think too often we probably don't do a very good job of warming up before we start getting into our more advanced drills and things of that nature. So, Jacob, you were also there and saw him go through this process. And so I'm going to kind of hand it over to you at this point too. I'm curious, you know, what you recall from that.
Yeah, the details are maybe debatable. Or by debatable, what I mean is whether or not everyone should be doing the same kind of warm-up or not is probably not as important as just the outright idea that we should be warming up. And you may feel differently, but I think that here's the key. Like if you start a drill, right? If you're like, okay, I'm going to run these three drills today while I'm at the range. Well, this could be, by the way, dry fire or live fire. I think both.
Absolutely.
This is equally applicable to either. So you have some drills that you're going to run, and let's say you don't do any warm up. You go right into it. A couple of bad things happen that we're trying to avoid. The first one is, frankly, self-confidence. Like, you know, you might not perform very well and you might feel like, oh my gosh, like I thought I was much better than this, or I thought I was doing much better. And self-confidence is very important. The other thing is, in my opinion, frankly, data. In order to improve, you have to have some sort of baseline. And if your baseline is completely off because you didn't warm up properly, then that's not very good either. The other interesting thing is that in a real life threatening situation that we're all preparing for, you know, when we do our training, there's so much adrenaline dump. There's so many other things physiologically that are happening that it puts you into a state that is much higher, right, in terms of your physiological response. And so warming up also does a little bit to kind of get you a little bit closer to that state. And so those are things that I think, you know, really are kind of critical about that warm-up process. Specific to Max's demonstration, I don't know that I even remember the details, to be frank, Riley.
Oh, I was taking notes. But really, I don't think there was too much really to take notes about. He basically started out gun and holster. And he explained, he's like, look, my goal right now is not to go as fast as I can. It's just to, you know, make sure I basically do it and nail the fundamentals as cleanly and as properly as I can. And he says, I'm going to start off with one shot. And he came out of the holster and just kind of very nice and controlled and pop, you know, not one shot on a steel plate, and then goes back to the holster. And then I think he said, now I'm going to do two shots. And he came out of the holster, one, two, you know, and then come back. And over the course of about I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes, he just keeps adding to this warm-up process, you know, moving to more shots, moving to shots on multiple targets, moving to performing reloads, and it was just in a very clean, methodical way that you could tell he's done it just that way many, many hundreds, if not thousands of times. And so I just was like, I was super impressed that he instead of just jumping right up and going, okay, I'm going to do this crazy awesome drill and wow you all, and turns around and, you know, just does it, he really kind of instructed folks that were in attendance the proper way of warming up for that sort of thing, which, by the way, I might add, is probably something he also needed because he was basically shooting cold, I'm sure. He was hanging around all day.
Cold.
And it was cold. That's right. And even, you know, especially for Las Vegas, you know. So I think, you know, it was just a really great demonstration. And so hence the inspiration. Maybe we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast in some form or fashion, but there's your training tip. When you go to the range, go through some sort of warm up process before you really start, you know, throwing a ton of lead down the range. And I think you'll find that it does a lot for you in terms of getting to that point where you're ready to, you know, start kind of running and gunning. And you mentioned too, Jacob, and I really like this point, that this would be good even in a dry practice format as well. And that's absolutely true. One thing, a final note for muscle memory, it's really helpful. You know, if you're doing hundreds or thousands of reps a week, which would be like what a pro shooter would do, you know, you're going to have pretty good muscle memory developed. But even when you've taken a break for half a day or even a full, you know, cycle a day, it's helpful for that muscle memory just to be refreshed, just to spend a few minutes and going through those drills in a methodical manner. So you see this in a lot of...
I'm sorry, Riley. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was going to say that sometimes that warm up is the entire drill for, you know, a lot of times. Maybe, you know, right before you go to bed, you're just going to snap up a couple of quick shots, you know, with the cert pistol, or right before you got the door, you know, maybe, you know, with that holster, with that configuration, with that outfit, you're going to snap up a couple of quick shots. You know, sometimes just like knowing what your warm up drill is really nice, because sometimes you're just priming yourself to walk out the door.
Absolutely. Yeah, and Kyle Lam talked quite a bit about that, about how he, you know, does a few reps before he goes out the door for the day. And if you missed that podcast back in December, go check it out. And so, just kind of back to what I was saying, I mean, if you watch a lot of professional, you know, competitive shooters, what do they always do before they begin, before a stage begins? They go down, they feel the gun, you know, they kind of one last check and kind of memorization. Okay, when the buzzer goes, I come down, the hand goes right here. And that's always, you know, it's very typical of a lot of competitive shooters, is one last kind of little refresher in the brain. Okay, that's where the gun is. All right, hands up or down or whatever, you know, it calls for in that stage. The buzzer goes and bam, you know, your hand goes right to where it just last was. So, good stuff, and hope that's helpful for a lot of you shooters out there trying to take it to the next level. I thought I would also mention too, Jacob, before we really get into it, Jacob and I both have a cold today, so bear with us, especially, you might even hear, I always try to, you know, keep these things out of the podcast, but, you know, it's entirely possible I'll get halfway through a sentence and go, you know, oh crap, and have to cough or sneeze or something, but anyway, we'll see how we do. So first up, let's get into news, and we got a news story out of Florida, where it's being reported that Florida is adding $2.6 million to their budget for concealed carry permits.
Yeah, this is really cool. Essentially, the gist of the deal is that, you know, Florida had last year received 244,000-ish applications. Now, their fiscal year is basically like July 1 through June 30. And so that, you know, during that time period would have been July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, they got 244,000 applications. And so based on that, they had originally requested a certain, you know, amount of revenue in order to keep up with that. But, you know, as they started going into this fiscal year, July 1, 2016 through June 30, 2017, they quickly figured out that they were going to do far more than that. By October, it said they had, you know, 3 months into the new year, they had already done 105,000 applications, right? So that's coming up on like half of what they'd done the year prior, and they're only 3 months in. So they need more money. You know, they got to hire more people and do stuff.
Yeah, and it says most of the new money is needed for background checks performed by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So that is the part of the process that takes the most time, no matter what state you're in, is always that background check portion. So this is exciting, you know. I mean, one, it's exciting to see more and more people getting their permits, which, you know, hopefully also means, Jacob, more and more people listening to this podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, we're seeing this all across the country. I mean, Colorado had a record-breaking year last year. I'm sure Utah did as well. So we're seeing, you know, more and more applications. And by the way, Florida has, I believe, the most permits on record for any state in the U.S. 1.7 million concealed weapons permits on file.
Wow. That's a ton. That's a handful.
Yeah, it is indeed. So that's Florida for you. And that was reported on our Florida gunclasses.com website. And then on to Colorado now. So on our ColoradoFirearmTraining.com site, Colorado schools move forward with arming employees. And we reported a little bit on this previously. And particularly it was in the news recently where a small school district passed it's not a law, right? But anyway, you know what I mean? Like a
resolution.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. To where they want to arm their staff members in their school district if those staff members, you know, choose to do so. And they're working through on what those training requirements would look like. So now what we have going on through the state is a bill, a Senate bill, and this is Senate Bill 17-005, or the Handgun Safety Training for School Employees Bill. It would allow a county sheriff to provide a gun safety course to any school employee who also holds a concealed carry firearm permit. Sheriffs are already involved in emergency response plans. And so this just kind of creates that path, making it really easy and simple for school staff members in school districts where it's legal for their staff members to carry concealed on campus. And this is, we're talking K-12 schools here. It's already, it's already allowed in Colorado to carry concealed for teachers or students on public college and university campuses. So this is for K-12 schools.
Yeah. Here's the key for those of you who really care. In Colorado right now, in K-12 schools, by default, someone just with a concealed carry permit cannot carry it, including a staff member. But there is an exemption in the law that says that the school district, or school administrator can hire contract security officers or private security officers. And so what you have is a handful of school districts in Colorado where the district has essentially determined that they will take teachers, faculty members, and also call them private security guards in order to allow those particular faculty members to be armed. So they're kind of leveraging, I won't call it a loophole, but that exemption in the law in order to arm certain faculty members. This Senate bill is not addressing that at all. The Senate, this current bill that's being proposed does not have anything to do with whether or not faculty can be armed or if so, how, and like all that. The only thing this bill would do is say, if the county sheriff's office wants to provide a gun safety course for faculty members, it can. Like, that's it. It's really not asking for a lot, in my opinion.
That was not how I read it. So apparently I've got this wrong. But I thought that it didn't necessarily have to be contracted private security in the exception in the law. I thought that if they are hired or the part of their job description is to provide security, that was the exception or something along those lines.
Yeah,
I got that wrong.
It's about a job title. And so, you know, if you are a school teacher and I as the school administrator in Colorado want you to allow you to be armed, then I must also amend your job title to be private security officer or security contract officer. And so yeah, that's how that works, right? Is that the statute says that, you know, I as an administrator can hire security officers or contract security officers. And so far, administrators have gotten away with dual purposing faculty members as such. And all that is fine. This current bill, the Senate bill, doesn't change any of that. The Senate bill purely says, hey, if you know, this is, in fact, the guy, Holbert, is the guy who proposed the Senate bill. What he's essentially saying is, okay, we got school districts who are going to arm their teachers. Like, they're doing that already. So with that in mind, is it okay if we, you know, allow the sheriff's office to provide some training for those teachers? Doesn't that sound like a good plan?
Well, you know, okay, so I'm seeing where you're coming from on that, and here's what I think. I think this is paving the way for a to put kind of in place a structure to make it easier for school districts to arm their staff members. And here's why: because the Hanover School District in basically east of, I think it's East El Paso County, they passed that resolution saying, We're going to allow staff members to be armed. But the one thing they're working through is what kind of training would be required for them to be able to do that. And they're working in conjunction with the sheriff's office there, working through the process and what types of courses and how many hours would be necessary for that to be a viable, option. And so this is just Riley reading between the lines. I think that this is kind of paving the way to make this a lot more easily achieved in the state of Colorado. Just my opinion.
I think that's true. I think it's, and frankly, I would call this smart legislation. Like, go after the lowest hanging fruit you can come up with, put it through. Create track record, go after the next one.
Yeah. Cool. Well, what's going on in Arizona? And on our ArizonaFirearmClasses.com site, we reported that the Arizona legislature looks to pass law allowing firearms in public buildings. Now, there's many states where this is the law, where you can possess a firearm or carry concealed in public buildings. There are still many states where that's not the case. And it's not unusual to come across even gun supporters that say, whoa, guns in our public buildings, we don't need to go that far. But what we see here in Colorado, in Utah, this is really not that big of a deal.
Yeah, the way I read it, it would make the Arizona legislation relative to public buildings. And let's just clarify, by the way, for those who are listening, when Riley or I use the word public, or anytime you see that in legislation, it's referring to buildings owned by the government, city, county, and state government buildings. So to make sure, like sometimes we hear public and you might think of like a shopping mall, like that's a private building, private property where they allow the public to enter. But when we say a public building, we're referring to city, county, or state government buildings in this context. So as far as I read it, this essentially would make the Arizona law that determines concealed carry in public buildings identical to the Colorado one, which essentially would say that in order for a city, county, or state government building to prohibit permit holders from carrying, they'd have to employ security guards and metal detectors at entrances.
Which sounds very similar to Colorado.
It's comparable. Yeah, very comparable, which in my mind makes complete sense, right? It's like, okay, like just blanket allow it. Like, why? What's the problem with someone having their gun in a library or, some of these other city, county, state buildings that really shouldn't be a big deal? But yeah, if you don't want them to take it into the courtroom, into the whatever, thing, the government facility, throw up a metal detector and check people, which we should be doing anyway. So if you really want those areas to be secure, you should be checking people regardless. And that would not only, make it very easy for a concealed carry permit holder to identify that they can't go there, but it also prevents criminals from taking guns there. So I'm a big fan of that legislation.
Right. Now, specifically in this legislation, it excludes courtrooms, federal buildings, which they have to. I mean, it's federal law, and that supersedes anything the state could do with regards to federal buildings. High schools and universities, I'm kind of disappointed to hear that, especially about universities. And also the Maricopa Medical Center, a very specific exclusion there.
Which is a county government building. It just happens to be a hospital.
Yep. So, hey, we'll see, where this goes. Certainly, I think it's common sense legislation. I mean, like you touched on very well, Jacob, when a state or a government of some sort has a law that's purely, it's just lip service, essentially, where, hey, it's against the law to bring a gun into this building. That means nothing as far as stopping, like you said, criminals or people that might actually go in there and do some harm. And we're obviously not concerned about us law-abiding folk, especially that have permits that have been background checked. So if you're actually, if you really care about keeping your government or public building secure, as you said, employ security guards and metal detectors at entrances. So there you have it. We'll keep you updated if we see any of these laws that we've talked on so far pass in these. We talked about so far Florida, Colorado, and Arizona. But now on to Montana. And reported on MontanaFirearmTraining.com, another one of our affiliate sites. We've got instructors there in Montana, so you might want to go check them out. Missoula background check deemed illegal. And we reported on this recently where the city of Missoula said, you know, we're not, we're basically going to require universal background checks on firearm purchases or transfers.
Within the city, right.
Within, right, exactly. Within the city of Missoula, which by the way, Missoula is a very nice little city. Sure. Yeah. And, but you now have the Attorney General of Montana, Tim Fox, coming out and stating that Missoula's, and this is quoting him, Missoula's ordinance is outside of its authority.
Love it.
And it also says here, according to this article, he issued an opinion stating state law does not allow cities to exercise any power that affects the right to bear arms. So Montana, like many states actually, has a preemption statute. So Missoula is going against that.
Yeah, yeah. This sounds, I mean, doesn't this like echo of what we saw in Nevada, where Nevada also passed a statewide universal background check law, and not just some city in Nevada, but a statewide thing. And then the Nevada Attorney General and the FBI both came out and said, I'm sorry, the way you wrote that law, it can't be done. Like, it's illegal. Sorry.
Right. No can do. Yeah.
Yeah, this sounds very similar to me.
Yep. So we'll see how this plays out. But when you've got the state attorney general saying, that usually doesn't bode well for a city jurisdiction like this. They would have to sue and take that up to court to a state, you know, like Supreme Court or perhaps even a federal court at some point just to, you know, win that right, if you will, which oftentimes doesn't happen, especially when there's a law already in place in the state saying, you can't do this. So if they want to change that, they got to go through the appropriate process of changing the state law. Now, mm-hmm. from Montana to Kansas, a Kansas lawmaker, this is a doozy. We love our lawmakers, right, Jacob? And sure. They love to tell us what we can and can't do, right? So Kansas lawmaker leaves loaded gun in state house room. Oh, dear. Coming to us from the Washington Post. And this happened, just a few days ago, last Tuesday, where a Kansas legislator acknowledged Thursday that he inadvertently left a loaded gun in a public committee room where a secretary found it a few minutes later. Republican representative, isn't that kind of a bummer? It's like, okay, you know, it's a Republican, you know, at least a guy that probably is pro-gun, and he's got to be an idiot. But anyway, Republican Representative Willie Dove said the incident occurred after Tuesday's meeting of the House Education Committee. Dove said he left the .380 caliber handgun in a holster under a table where lawmakers sit, where it wouldn't have been visible to audience members because of a curtain on the table. The room, which is generally unlocked during business hours, can seat about 40 people. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, essentially, you know, what goes down here is he starts to feel some swelling in his leg, and so his ankle holster starts to feel uncomfortable. So he takes off the gun in holster, you know, just takes off the entire holster and sets it down on the ground.
Yep. And you know, we've talked about this sort of thing. It applies, you know, we use the context of someone going to a restroom and using a restroom, and what's the, you know, what are some tips and tricks and kind of procedures, if you will, that you should follow when you're disarming yourself, going to a public restroom. And it would apply here as well. I mean, anytime you remove that gun from your person, you run the risk of leaving it. You know, this has happened where teachers and other people have left guns on the back of a toilet in a public restroom. I think it happened in a school in Utah a few years ago. It happens all over the time, all over the place. Anytime you don't carry on your person, even if you're carrying in a purse or a bag of some sort, you always run the risk of leaving that bag somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah, it is kind of one of those embarrassing things, and it's kind of didn't we just have another one? I can't remember what state it was from, but there was a representative whose gun fell out of a bag. New Hampshire, that's right. And like just fell to the ground, and like she quickly like bent over and picked it up. Like I kind of appreciate that we have legislatures that, you know, are armed and packing around. Like that's cool, you know, like that's great. But like maybe they need to call us and have us come teach a class or something. Like I'm just worried about, you know, the level of training that they're getting. Now here's the other thing I will say in their defense. that these kinds of things probably happen more often than we'd like to admit to normal people. But because these people are in high-profile positions, it's being reported on and getting a lot more media attention than it otherwise would.
Right. Yeah, and it, just to refresh people's memories, it was just earlier this month that a New Hampshire lawmaker's loaded gun fell to the ground from her waistband at the start of a committee hearing where children were present. And then also in 2013, an aide to Missouri's House Speaker resigned after leading a loaded gun in a Capitol bathroom. What did I just talk about, right? And the irony here is that on the same day that this incident in Kansas became public, a state Senate committee held a hearing on legislation that would repeal a law allowing people to carry concealed weapons into public hospitals and clinics and into buildings on state, university, and college campuses. That law, if passed, is set to take effect in July. This legislator that left his gun under the committee table voted for that concealed carry law. So just a little bit of irony there. And, you know, Representative Dove, if you happen to be listening to the podcast, we hope that you'll go back and listen to some of our previous episodes where we've talked about, you know, proper tips and tricks and strategies and procedures of how to carry concealed safely and effectively and not make stupid mistakes like this. So good luck with that.
Yeah. And the mistake was not forgetting it. The mistake was putting it on the ground to begin with, just to clarify. For it was like, you just don't do that. You don't take it off and set it on the ground. You say, oh, you know what? It's not working for me right now. My leg's swelling up right up, whatever. You know, you put it somewhere else, or you just sit there and deal with it, or you excuse yourself and you go out and you lock it in a car, but you just don't set it on the ground. So the mistake was not forgetting it there. The first mistake was taking it off.
Yeah. Yep. Leave it on you. And that reminds me of the incident a little more than a year ago where there was that police lieutenant in Indiana, I want to say, where he, and there's video of this, he's in the elevator, and he's been carrying concealed, and it almost appears, and I believe if I remember the follow-up story, was that, you know, the gun was kind of causing him some discomfort, so he decided to remove it from his holster, no-no number one, and tried to place it in a pocket on his jacket when either his finger, or it could even be like a button from his jacket, slipped into that trigger guard, fired the gun. And the bullet ricocheted because it happened to hit perfectly at like a you know, 45 degree angle of the elevator door, which was steel, and then ricocheted 90 degrees to the sidewall, which was also steel, and then ricocheted another 90 degrees and came back and hit him in the gut. And that's, I share that in every class I teach where I have the ability to share a video pointing out that, look, it's in the holster. I know it's causing you, you know, discomfort or whatever, you gotta be disciplined and leave it there, because these are the sorts of things that can and sometimes do happen when people pull guns out of holsters or pull holsters out of their waistband and set things down and stuff. So just take that little bit of info there as a tip, and we hope that we don't find any more stories like this from you folks out there.
Yep.
Now, we mentioned Missouri in that last story there. And so turning now to Missouri, a story from Fox 4 KC. So this is a Kansas City Fox News affiliate. They have this story saying permits training dropped dramatically in wake of new Missouri constitutional carry law. And that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I think this is interesting too. So for those who don't follow, Missouri recently, on January 1st, a law went into effect that allowed that people in Missouri could carry concealed without obtaining a permit. And so the story here is, okay, now that people don't need to get a permit in order to carry concealed, the number of people who are applying for permits is dramatically dropped. And there's some legit, like, decent journalism here. They actually have some quotes and some statistics from a sheriff's office that talks about how, you know, last year at this time they'd issued 619 permits. This year they've only issued 109. So that's an 80% plus drop. They talk about instructors who can't fill their classes anymore, blah, blah, blah. I find this interesting. I also think I think it's a temporary lull. I think that things may not come back to the levels where they once were, but I think that they will see that, you know, things will start to come up. And especially as people start to understand more about reciprocity. And certainly if the national reciprocity bill goes through, people are going to be knocking down the door to get that permit.
Right. And just to clarify, in case you're new to this podcast or you don't understand, it's so important that you still obtain a proper concealed carry or license to carry or whatever, concealed handgun permit in your state if you ever wish to carry also concealed outside of that state. And so, you know, constitutional carry is great. It's nice. It's fun. But we've seen this in Idaho. We've seen it in, you know, we're just talking about Missouri, Kansas, Alaska, all these states where they've gone to the constitutional carry model, but it doesn't do you any good if you're ever going to leave that state. So please still consider getting your permit and also consider getting training. Of course, we are always advocating training here at concealedcarry.com. And I agree, Jacob, with your assessment that this may be a temporary lull, that people are like, oh, cool, great. I don't have to go get this class now. I don't have to go apply for this permit now. And then, you know, as they get into a little bit more and they start researching laws, which is a natural consequence of doing something new, they might, you know, have that realization that, oh, wait, I can carry concealed here in Missouri. But if you're, particularly if you're in Kansas City, which is right there on the border of Kansas and Missouri, a lot of people commute across state lines to go to work or to do whatever. So it's going to be really important for some of you to make sure you have a permit that has reciprocity with those neighboring states.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And we see that all the time, right? Someone's like, oh, great, I don't need a permit. So they start carrying around a gun a little bit. And how long, I mean, how many hours, how many days is it going to take carrying around a gun before you start to think, huh, I wonder what the laws are about, like, if I can take it there. Or what do I have to do if I go here? Or crap, I guess I can't actually travel. Like, you right. know, all of a sudden, you know, and so frankly, we love constitutional carry. And I love that it actually gets more people into carrying concealed than, you know, than they would have otherwise. But eventually those people tend to figure out they need training.
Yep, absolutely. Let's turn now to an unfortunate story coming out of Quebec City, Canada, which was, this just happened last night. So Sunday evening about, I believe, 7 o'clock local time there, there was a mass shooting that took place at a mosque in Quebec City. And there's two suspects. One shooter was initially captured and arrested. And I believe they've got that other suspect now.
Turn himself in.
Right. And so, first of all, our thoughts, our prayers, and our hearts go out to those of you, you know, in our neighboring nation of Canada and in the Montreal and Quebec City area. We're sorry, you know, that this sort of thing happened. And these things, unfortunately, do happen in a world like today. But the thing I thought was really interesting out of the story, Jacob, and there were six victims that were killed, and a number of other people are wounded. What was interesting, though, was that this crime was committed in Canada with an AK-47-style rifle.
Yeah, where in the world did they get that?
Right, which is, it's an outlawed, you know, gun in Canada. So exactly, you know, I mean, sometimes people will point to Canada as being a good model for gun control, but clearly that their gun control did not prevent this attacker from getting his hands on a gun that's completely outlawed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and you know, again, this is very obviously a terror attack.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is.
It doesn't seem like it was a random target. To go to a mosque and to have this kind of an attack. So, you know, it's sad. It's tragic that these kinds of things are happening, but it just continues to prove, I think, the point.
Right. So, anyway, prayers, like I said, go out to those of you in that area, and we're sorry this sort of thing happened. We hope all those victims that and their families that have been affected are able to recover and, you know, move on from this as quickly as possible. So, anyway, let's move on to, I don't know if I should say a happier note, but happier at least, I think, in how the story resolves itself. And this is our first justified story of today. Reported on our FloridaGunClasses.com website, a Pasco County man stops robbery with force. And Jacob, why don't you take this one away?
Yeah, this story is actually super confusing. So let me tell you what I definitely clearly understood, and then you maybe can help me sort this out. But this is on January 26th at 6:40 a.m. in the morning, which always shocks me when criminals commit crime early in the morning. I don't know. I think of them as late night people. But anyway, Christopher Lilly, he's our BG, he's our bad guy. And he walks into a Food Mart convenience store there in Florida. He's wearing a mask, and he intends on robbing the store. So he demands money, orders the clerk and a customer into a walk-in cooler, okay? So you got to imagine this, right? Like, he's forcing these people back into some walk-in cooler. Now, when the clerk and the customer get into the cooler, the customer happens to have his concealed carry handgun, and he hands it to the clerk, I think, who... this always blows my mind, right? Like, I mean, okay, hey, check it out. I got a gun. Here, take it. Go use it. And then the clerk exits the cooler and fires a warning shot. I guess that in their mind, they're like, hey, I got an idea. We'll just fire a warning shot, and then the bad guy will run away or something. So the warning shot is fired, and then the bad guy drops his gun, I think, and the clerk and the customer like wrestle with this guy and try and subdue him, I think. And right. during this little wrestling match, the customer reclaims either his gun or the bad guy's gun, I'm not sure, and shoots the bad guy in the thigh. And then it's now we're kind of getting to the point where bad guy starts to try and escape, and the deputies show up and they catch him and arrest him. Did I get that right? The whole thing's kind of a mess.
That's kind of why I was chuckling as you're going through it, because it is a really bizarre story. So, yeah, to sum it up, this Lily fella, who's the suspect of this crime, comes into the store, orders the customer and the clerk of the store into the cooler, and the customer has a concealed handgun permit, hands his concealed weapon to the clerk, and, right, clerk fires a warning shot or something, bad guy drops gun, they tackle him, a little bit more fighting ensues. A shot is eventually again fired again, wounding the suspect in the thigh. Wow.
Yeah.
So, and the suspect, was arrested. He was treated for his injuries at a hospital. And of course, now will be, he's being held on charges of armed robbery and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. And as far as we can tell from this story, the customer nor the clerk, neither one of them are being charged with any particular crimes. In fact, a quote from the sheriff's office says, "The customer definitely stopped the crime from being committed and may have saved someone's life. Preliminary information indicates he exercised his right with a concealed weapons permit. He was in accordance with the law in what happened."
Yep. There you have it.
So there you have it. But now we get on to our final story, and it's our second justified story for today. And I've been excited to talk about this one the whole episode, Jacob. From ABC,
lots of buildup on that.
Right. From 6ABC in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, ambushed delivery man speaks after returning fire in southwest Philadelphia.
Now, Riley,
so what we have here.
I'm just going to ask, have you ever been a pizza delivery man?
No.
Oh, I have.
I have worked in fast food, but I have not delivered pizzas.
I've delivered pizzas. And so anyway, I'm sorry. I just had to ask. Go ahead.
I did not know that about you, though, by the way.
Yeah, it was a short gig, like January through early May 2005.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, there you have it. You should have saved that for, Jacob, the man who used to be a pizza delivery driver on our Wednesday episode of the podcast.
That would have been a letdown. People are like, so what?
So here's the story. We have a pizza delivery man who, he works for, I can't remember the name of the pizza shop. Doesn't really matter. But it wasn't a chain one.
Chester Pizza. Not,
okay, yeah. And so they get an order. He gets his address of where he's going to deliver this pizza. It turns out that address is actually a vacant house. And he doesn't know that yet, though. He shows up. He pulls up to this address. He's just getting out of the car when he's approached by a man with a gun, holding the gun, pointing it at the pizza delivery driver's head. And this, by the way, his name is, I believe it's Kevet or Kevet. Fredericks. And that's how they pronounce the name in the news story. There's a video here you can watch as well. And he said, "When I turned, the gun was in my face. He came out of nowhere." This 36-year-old father of eight, which is amazing to me, he was delivering pizzas for, there you go, Chester Pizza, just after 7 p.m. He got out of his car and almost immediately found himself face-to-face with the armed suspect. A group of males came from the abandoned property towards him. One pulled a gun, pointed at the pizza delivery driver's head, and demanded money and pizzas. There was a struggle. FedEx made it to his car. And then he continues and says, I smacked his gun, ran around my vehicle. I had dropped the pizzas. I heard one shot. Now, this is really interesting. I'm impressed, actually, with the clarity that he describes the next events here. He says, I felt it hit me. I can tell you, I felt it go through my arm. I heard it literally hit my gun that was on my side, on my holster, and I felt it go inside of me. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And then it clarifies in the story here, he was struck in the arm and hip. On Tuesday afternoon, when the news station here, Channel 6 ABC in Philly, was interviewing him, he was still wearing the same blood-soaked clothes he wore the night before, with the bullet hole visible in his holster and the shirt. You got to go watch this video, by the way. Somehow, after being shot, Fredericks managed to duck behind his car, unholster his weapon, and fire. I fired once at him, and he took off down the block. If it wasn't for the gun on my hip, it would have been a lot more damage.
Yes, he does so have cool.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal story. He does have a permit to carry concealed. He was doing so legally. He's not charged with any crimes, as far as we could tell, nor should he be, in my opinion, based on the circumstances that we have. He explained he only had $80 on him in total cash. So, I mean, he was just kind of like, wow, you know, like, what's your problem? You know, what were you going to get? $80 and some pizzas, you know, versus my life? I mean, come on, you know. So, really a fascinating story. Jacob, your thoughts and opinions?
Yeah, it wasn't clear to me. The only thing, like, the pending question in my brain is, when he was shot, did the bullet that went through his arm and went through his holster, did it hit the gun? I was really curious, you know, did the gun take a bullet and then, you know, continue to operate? So anyway, that was just a little, maybe not relevant, but interesting thing I was wondering about that wasn't clear to me. But yeah, I've delivered pizza. I don't ever recall being scared for my life. I can tell you I was packing heat when I was delivering pizzas. And I was very impressed with some of the instincts that this guy had. He instinctively smacked the gun of the BG. Like he didn't just like turn and run. Like he kind of forced an altercation that might have bought him some time to get back to his car. So he smacked the bad guy's gun and then ran around his vehicle. So, I mean, imagine if he hadn't reached out and smacked that bad guy's gun. If he had just turned and started running, he might not have had much distance, and the shot, you know, from the BG's gun might have hit him in a very vital place. But he bought himself a little bit of time. He used his vehicle as cover, which I found obviously, you know, maybe that's obvious or instinctive, but I still think it's impressive. And then he'd draw and he fired, you know, he'd fired back. So I just all around thought that this is a person who obviously takes concealed carry very seriously. We don't know a lot about, you know, how often he trains or, you know, what training he's had. But I do think that's interesting. As a last note, I'll say this. This guy was ambushed for roughly $80 in cash and a couple of pizzas.
Right.
By multiple male assailants. Like, they weren't looking for thousands of dollars. They weren't busting into a jewelry store or a pawn shop. I mean, they just, you know, for them, easy victim, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, this guy's got a little bit of cash on him, and he's got a couple of pizzas. Like, we're hungry, and yes, that'll buy some drugs or whatever. Like, it doesn't take much to be a victim.
Yeah. You know, I can't help but read this story and think of another one that did not end so well for the delivery man. And
another one you're thinking of.
Yeah, it's very vivid in my mind because it happened very close to home here in Colorado a couple of years ago, where pizza delivery driver Nathan Leon was killed. You know, very similar. You know, an order was placed, a false order, simply to lure him to a certain place, a certain time where he could be ambushed. He was actually taken captive by the suspect, Evan Abel, and then driven to a more remote area where he was then shot and killed execution style. And the whole reason this happened was honestly for something almost even less in terms of value. This guy wasn't, Evan Abel wasn't interested in money. He wasn't interested in anything really other than he was looking to get this pizza delivery driver's uniform so that he, as well as the pizza bag and all of that, so he could play the part of a pizza delivery driver who then showed up a few days later, or maybe it was even the next day, at the Department of Corrections chief here in Colorado, trying to think of his name, Tom Clements. You know, that was his way of getting in the door with this guy, so he could see him face to face, shoot him point blank range, kill him as well. And then we know a few days later, Evan Ebel's life was taken in Texas, where he had ran off to, and law enforcement actually didn't necessarily realize who they were probably encountering when that happened. But he shot a police officer, a deputy down there, and the whole thing ended finally. It's just, that's the story that came to mind. And I'm thinking, how lucky is this guy, Kivett Fredericks in Philadelphia? How lucky is he? How blessed is he to still be alive today, to be able to go home, see and spend time with his 8 children, because he was at least in some regard prepared and able to defend himself. Mm-hmm. And good, observations from you, Jacob, as far as, you know, he created that distraction. He parried the gun away, you know, then moved as quickly as he could to get to cover. Still, you know, still got shot in the process, but it could have been far worse for him if he hadn't been able to do that. Got to his gun, fired. I don't believe he hit any of the suspects, but it was enough that they went, oh, hey, this dude's got a gun. We don't want to tangle with him now. We're out of here. So as far as I can see, they are still searching for these suspects, but, a remarkable story, a remarkable man, and well, I'd love to get him on the podcast and have him tell his story firsthand.
Yeah, that would be intense.
Absolutely. So, any final thoughts on that or anything else we've discussed today?
You know, just what I said before, anyone can be a victim. You know, you don't have to be carrying a lot of cash. You don't have to be, you know, in the wrong place. I mean, you're just not safe anywhere, so you always got to be on your guard.
Yeah, good advice. So, with that, that's our Justified stories for today. We've covered all these other news stories. We thank you for listening. But before you go, don't forget, we have 2 announcements. And I realized I made a mistake, apparently. earlier in the episode, I said that today's episode of the podcast was brought to you by Guardian Nation, which you're always welcome and encouraged to check out our premium community that you may want to consider being a part of. That is Guardian Nation. You can check that out at guardiannation.com. We have our monthly live broadcast, and we're getting ready to ship our first quarterly box that all members of Guardian Nation get. So very excited about that. But today's episode is also brought to you by Sports Afield Gun Safes, the lowest prices ever now being offered on concealedcarry.com. Sports Afield has been taking care of the American sportsman for over 100 years. Their line of handgun and full-size safes balances incredible quality and economic prices. With the best warranty in the business, you can trust Sports Afield with your tools of self-defense. In fact, right now, both the single and double handgun pistol safes are on sale, so go check it out now at concealedcarry.com/shop, and you should see them there. But, Jacob, I think you got another announcement for our loyal podcast listeners, and I'll let you share that.
Yep. Listen up, people. So here's the deal. We are really excited because February 16th, 2016, last year, was the date of the first release of this podcast. Episode number 1 went live on February 16th, 2016. And so we're coming up on our 1-year anniversary, and it's kind of a big deal. At least it is to us. You probably don't care, but you're about to care because what we're doing. We're going to do a huge giveaway. We're securing prizes, and I'll tell you a little bit about the prizes that we've already secured, which there's several. But the short of it is, we're going to have some prizes here, and we're asking you to essentially take a survey, an anonymous one at that, that will help us as a company to secure sponsors and other things for this podcast, so we can continue to bring it to you and do this podcast. And in exchange for taking that survey, you're going to be entered to win some of these awesome prizes. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. I am totally stoked for this. I mean, it's crazy to think, Jacob, that it was quite literally a year ago now that you and I were talking about the whole idea of starting this podcast. And a few weeks later, in as you mentioned, the middle of February, we took a leap of faith and launched our first episode. And it's just mind-blowing to me how far we've come in just this year. We've gone from being a nobody on, if you look at the podcast rankings in iTunes, we've gone from being basically a nobody to being consistently the top-rated or top and even top ranked gun related podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. So it's just incredible. It's been an incredible journey. We always are so appreciative of all of you, our listeners, for your support, for those of you that have taken the time and cared enough to leave us feedback, to leave us a review of the podcast on iTunes. And we get messages from you folks all the time asking for tips and suggestions and help. And, you know, as much as we are able to the extent that we're able to, we strive to help. And we've had plenty of suggestions, too, from podcast listeners. You know, hey, wish you would talk about this news story or talk about this concept in concealed carry. So the giveaway is our way of thanking you and celebrating this 1 year anniversary coming up here very soon. And Jacob, why don't you give a few more details, both in terms of what we're giving away and what you got to do to take part in that?
Yep, here we go. So there, currently we have secured 5 prizes, and I can tell you there's going to be more that we'll announce these as we keep listening to the episodes, and we'll talk more about these. But right now, when you enter, you could win any of the following, okay? We're going to give one winner a copy of American Gun Law. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know all about it. It's a big deal. We sell it for $97 currently on our website. It's a lot of information about gun law and how to prepare for legal defense for any sort of firearm-related legal incidents. It's really awesome. We're going to give away to one winner a Sportsafield double handgun side access safe. These safes retail for close to $200. They're really nice. I think right now they might be on sale on our website for like $170 something. So it's a really nice safe, high quality, phenomenal construction, great, best warranty in the business. Sportsafield does such a great job with their safes. One winner is going to win a soft body armor plate from Bullet Safe. These are really cool. I mean, they're kind of soft and malleable, but they have really good body armor. What am I trying to say? Ballistics or research or stats or whatever. Really impressive. Bullet Safe does a good job. And those retail for like $90. And so we're giving one of those away. We're going to give away a Mantis X firearm training device. These are really cool. You've heard us talk about this before. They go on the rail of your gun and they give you some phenomenal feedback when you're shooting. We're giving one of those away. We're Gary Q, our man Gary Q that you heard on our podcast a week ago. Gary Quisenberry. Yes, I can never. I just don't even try his last name. I just say Q. But Gary Q, he's going to give away his Q Series Stealth Holster Mag Carrier Combo, which is awesome. I'm so stoked about that. It's about a $70 value. And there's other prizes coming. So one prize per winner. So that means right now we're going to have at least 5 winners. I know that we're going to have some other prizes here that we're working on securing right now. So you could win any of those things. It's very, very, very exciting. So what do you have to do to enter to win? All you have to do is go to concealedcarry.com/podcast giveaway. All one word, podcast giveaway. Okay, all one word. concealedcarry.com/podcast giveaway. When you get there, it's a survey. The survey part is anonymous, so you fill out the survey, just answer those questions truthfully, you hit next, and then it takes you to a form, and pay close attention. On that page is where you have to fill in your name and email and hit enter. If you only fill out the survey, but you don't fill out the form on the second page, you're not entered. Like, we appreciate you taking the survey, but we don't have your information because the survey is anonymous. So you fill out the survey, you hit next, and then on the next page, you fill out that form. And you can only enter once, so you don't need to come back and do it every day. There's no reason to take the survey more than once. So just fill out that form once, and you're automatically entered for all the prizes. And we're going to run this through February 15th. On February 15th, which is a Wednesday, we're going to publish a podcast episode that day always, because it's a Wednesday like normal. And in that podcast episode, we'll be announcing the winners.
Right. So follow those instructions that Jacob just gave. It's, you know, you got to go fill out that very simple, brief survey. What is it, Jacob? Maybe 10 questions, tops?
Yeah, about 10, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to do. And I mean, we're looking to get feedback from you, our listeners, as to, you know, what you like about the podcast and maybe what we could do a little bit to improve as well, and get to know you as listeners a little bit better. And but don't forget to make sure you put in your name and email address on that next page. And it's not connected to the survey results. We'll see the results and we won't know who said what. But like Jacob said, if you don't give us your name and email address, then we won't have any way of getting in touch with you to let you know you've won a prize. So don't miss out. Don't forget to do that. And this is live right now, right, Jacob? So they can go to concealedcarry.com/podcast giveaway to fill out that brief survey and sign up for the giveaway. So go do it now. Anyway, thank you so much again, everyone, for your support of this podcast. And this is, you know, a little bit of our way of giving back to you and making things fun and interesting. And hope that you will really enjoy getting, you know, winning those prizes for some of you lucky folks out there. So, and odds are good because, I mean, we've got a kind of an idea of about how many, you know, it's not going to be like it's that many people that are going to probably actually do this.
Yeah, you're probably not fighting 50,000 people. It's your odds are better than that.
Yeah, so odds, you know, we're going to add more prizes to this list, and so odds of winning a prize are extremely good. So with that, I'm going to let you all go, and it's been a pleasure. We'll see you on the Wednesday episode this week. We'll probably remind you of the podcast giveaway and survey opportunity during that episode as well, so expect to hear more about that, and including more about some additional prizes if we get those lined up and ready to go. And so with that, Jacob, any last words?
Oh, watch your six, and thanks for giving us a shot.
Absolutely. Thanks again, everyone. Take care, be safe, train hard, and we'll see you on the Wednesday episode.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.